You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Okay, show of hands, who here signed up for this review just because they thought it was about gay icon Klaus Nomi? Anybody? It can't just be me.
Well, this gay icon did not.
Really? Okay, well, that tells you a lot about me, because for most people, they see the name Nomi, N-O-M-I, they're going to think of only one certain specific character from a legendarily bad movie, but I didn't think about that because I've never seen that fucking movie. That's not entirely true. I've seen like 30 minutes of it. That's all I could take. But anyhow...
Which movie? Which movie?
The one that dare not speak its name? No, it's Showgirls. Come on. If you click the link, they click the link, Frank. They saw the description. They've seen the thumbnail.
It's too late to turn back. It's far too late.
It's too late now. And this is actually, we are obviously not reviewing the movie Showgirls, but over
Wouldn't
the past 20-something years, though, that would be, over the past 20-something years, the movie has developed this really strange sort of cult following, so much so that writer-director Jeffrey McHale decided to channel his love for Showgirls and make a whole feature-length documentary about the fandom that has sprung around this demented disaster piece, whatever you want to call it, and he's brought together a handful of contributors to talk about what makes Showgirls a misunderstood work, and whether or not he's successful in convincing us, that's what we're here to discuss today. I am joined today, of course, by my good friend Frank.
Hiya.
And, of course, I'm recording with Ryan for the first time.
How's it going?
Well, it's going well, guys. I'm so glad that we're here today to discuss this. And because we are doing this on the internet through audio, you don't know if we're naked or not. We could be stripping throughout this entire review. And that would probably still be more entertaining than Showgirls. It's radio for the mind, and you all have dirty minds. Okay, we've kind of talked enough about just the basic setup. So what do you guys think about, not Showgirls, but this documentary about Showgirls?
You know, it's so weird because I think with most documentaries, its subjects are sort of kept at an arm's length. And so there's always like some distance. But here, I mean, virtually all, I think about 90% of this documentary is footage from Showgirls. So in a way, it is revisiting Showgirls, or maybe more like 85%, because you have the director Paul Verhoeven's other films, clips from those interspersed. But so the bulk of this is footage from Showgirls. So it's in a way, as a documentary, it's kind of hard to it blurs the lines a little bit too much to be, sort of like typical or traditional. And whatnot. You're too close to the subject to look at it as anything as a straightforward documentary, I think.
Yeah, Ryan, will you echo that thought, or did you feel differently?
Felt kind of like a video essay on steroids, and it really I thought, like, even though the director is definitely an advocate for Showgirls and loves this movie, and like unironically, it seems like. I think that he did a good job at showing kind of both sides and showing this whole like community that has gotten behind it because they like bad movies and just enjoy laughing at bad movies, but also showing the people who think that it's just this kind of forgotten masterpiece because Paul Verhoeven directed it, essentially. That's really the only thing that I think That's like the strongest piece of evidence for it being a masterpiece, in my opinion. I don't know how you guys felt. I don't know if this convinced you.
I think that you're right in the sense in what the documentary director did, is that he really, because, you know, this is one critic after another, and it's not one at a time. They're intercut with each other, and they've all got different takes. Some view this, you know, one views this as a really feminist piece. Other view it as like a camp classic, and they go one, they're, you know, they have their thoughts jumping in one at, you know, one after the other, back and forth, and the way that the director intercuts, you know, selects which clips of the film to show at which times, really best exemplify and illustrate each critic's points, you know, simultaneously in a lot of ways. And so I think he did a good job with that. It shows that he's got like a really good relationship with this film, that he's so well versed in it, that he knows which that it is so multifaceted. And so I think on that level it works.
Yeah, well, one thing that becomes apparent right away is that nobody involved with the actual film participated on this documentary.
That's for sure.
And I don't know, they may not want to talk about it. Perhaps, you know, maybe they're embarrassed, or maybe, you know, they asked for money and the guy couldn't afford it. We don't know, but I would like to think that, not to sound mean, but I suspect Elizabeth Berkley has time. She probably could have sat down and just said, yeah, you know, I'll talk about it. Let me look at my busy schedule. You know, I finished shooting Dancing with the Stars and my little thing for the HGTV channel. Well, yeah, I've got time to talk.
Well, she was on that that CSI, I don't know, the one that was in with David Caruso. She was on there for a few seasons.
Okay, yeah. I mean, and that's one of the kind of the tragedies that they talk about in this film, because her career kind of got torpedoed. She was best known, of course, for her work on Saved by the Bell. Mm-hmm. And like so many child or former child stars, it seems like they reach that point where they go, I have to change my image to be accepted as an adult. And she did the most adult rated thing she could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this movie just, you know, it's hard to remember, you know, because it came out in 1995. This movie was savaged in the press.
I remember, I don't know how old you were in 1995, Marco. I was 13. And even I looked at it. I mean, I was more of a savvy 13-year-old because I went to R-rated movies. But I could tell this is the go-to punchline in 1995 within the industry.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, it's one of those movies that just sort of became like this legendary box office bomb. And what people forget is that the writer and the director, Joe Esterhazy and Paul Verhoeven, respectively, they were on a hot streak at that point. Mm-hmm. They just come off of Basic Instinct. You know, Verhoeven and Esterhazy were both like A-listers. And this movie basically just got them kicked off that list. And it didn't do any favors for Elizabeth Berkley, who was just really starting out. And it's hard to blame the actors. I don't know that Elizabeth Berkley was ever a great actor, but boy, she commits to every stupid thing she is asked to do in this movie. And she gave it her all, but her all was not enough to save this horrible movie.
Every single action in Showgirls is just turned up to 11. I think that's the best way to describe it. Like, there is no... It is, like, the ultimate, like, scene... It's like you're chewing scenery, but you're going further than that. Like, it's just... It's so insane.
Even for the smallest moments, like, different places! I mean, it's just like... I mean, come on. It's you know, this movie is on such an adrenaline rush. Even in moments where it's meant to be like sort of quiet and pensive, it's just like, I don't understand like the mentality that, I mean, one of the things that this documentary really does is it makes you question or just revel in the fact that, wow, they were really buying into this.
Yeah.
Cast and crew. I mean, they really believed in this thing, and they were really for better or worse, and, you know, for the most part worse, they were giving it their all.
And that's something that McHale points out, because he goes... Now, I said that there is no participation from any of the cast or crew, but that doesn't mean they aren't heard or seen. There's a lot of archival interviews here, and you get to see them on the promotional tour before, like, really, and looking at promotional material and interviews. And the way they were selling this movie, the way they were talking about it before the reviews came in, it seems pretty clear that they thought they were doing something serious.
Yeah.
And then when they, and then they're like, that's one of the questions that Meg Hale raises, this idea of revisionism, where even the creators are going, well, yeah, of course we meant it to be a joke. It was always supposed to be over the top.
I will say that's the exception for Kyle MacLachlan, who said, hey, look, we were told to play it straight. We were told to play it completely straight, and that's what I thought I was doing.
He's the only one I believe, really.
Yeah.
Because that dude's worked with David Lynch. He knows when you're being directed to be weird on purpose.
Oh, for sure.
But no, I also got to give props to Gina Gershon, who has gone, I don't know if she said it, I don't know if it's mentioned here, maybe it is, but she's gone on subsequent interviews. She's never shied away from this film because she's like just kind of ballsy broad that she is. But she's admitted, like, she played it like a drag queen. She knew she was making camp. Mm-hmm. She saw it as that. And I like what she, her bit of interview footage in this, where she likens it to the Tale of Aphrodite.
I just wanted to point out something that you're doing and what I was doing earlier, what I was afraid of, which is this is going to become a review about Showgirls and not this documentary. And it's hard to discuss them without, because this movie, here's the problem with this movie. All right, I'm sorry
with the documentary.
You've been waiting. Let's actually talk about the documentary. Let's actually review the documentary. McHale does something that I can respect, which is he doesn't want to do your traditional, boring, you know, talking heads documentary. So what he does, as Frank mentioned earlier, he shows a lot of footage. He also intersperses it with shots from other Verhoeven films to kind of show visual motifs and different sort of thematic parallels, and sometimes even combining them together
other in films as well.
Ways. Yeah. And the thing is, all of that stuff is overlaid with the voices of, I think there's like 10 different voices. And I only know that because I looked it up. And the problem is you get a title on the screen of who is speaking, but you never see them. And again, I understand, get away from the boring talking head. The problem is all of these people have slightly different takes on this movie, and they are being cut together. At times it is hard to tell who's talking, and sometimes their view contradicts what has just been said. At one point, some guy spends a lot of effort going about talking about like the use of mirroring and doubling in the movie.
And the camera shots between the two of them in the restaurant.
Like breaking the 180 degree line.
It's a great commentary, but at the same time, you're right. It's
But then another lady comes on and she basically says, you know, mirrors, really? That's what you're hanging your thesis on? I mean, again, it's like, yeah, you shot it really pretty, but it's still a terrible movie, in spite of all your efforts to provide some kind of visual resonance or some kind of thematic linking material. That is the frustrating thing about this movie, because it tries to make a convincing argument for why this is an understood film, but it's not coherently presented.
It isn't. I think had it been, even though I can understand why documentarians are so adverse to the talking head format, because it has been done since the beginning of time, and it is visually, it's not the most interesting at all. But I think that would have kept everything grounded. That would have kept me grounded. I mean, I got sucked into the world of Showgirls, the movie.
Yeah.
You know, even though I really loved all the different takes on that were being presented, and I listened to what the critics said. And I think a lot of the points are valid, but at the same time, it felt like I was just, I mean, it felt like a, like in a lot of ways, like what you said, Ryan, like a video essay,
right?
Or an extended, special feature.
It felt right. No, I was actually just about to say the same thing. It felt like a really, really good, like, featurette that probably could have been cut down to like an hour or I don't know. I definitely felt its length, and especially in the middle. And I don't know, I found the diner scene, or not the diner scene, the scene where they were eating at dinner. I don't know, like that analysis, it was definitely interesting.
With the doggy chow?
Yeah, the doggy chat. Yeah. It was funny and well thought out, but I just, it felt like I couldn't tell if the critic was being serious or not. Like, it felt like, is this just like some people think Showgirls is just this kind of like ironic, like bad on purpose kind of thing? Like, is that criticism that? Like, I don't know.
I really venture to say he was being serious. I'm maybe something the way he, it was in his voice or the fact that he, I don't know that he would, I think he would have had much more fun things to say than, you know, I mean, like, oh, look, when Crystal averts her eyes to the side, you know, sort of, I don't think it would have been that specific if he was just doing it for fun. It would have been like, fucking talking about doggy chow. I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I forget who it was, but who said it, but it was like, you know, just basically said, yeah, this movie's in reference to a totally different movie. This movie is garbage, but it's the kind of garbage only a genius could make. I'm not quite sure I'm willing to say Paul Verhoeven is a genius, but he's a great, he is, when he is firing on all cylinders, he's a very good director.
For sure. Yeah.
I expect him to direct the hell out of these scenes, but boy, was it written badly. Boy, it feels pervy. And honestly, it's a really weird thing that I've never seen all of this movie, but I feel like just in the clips, you feel like you've watched it.
You really do.
But I never felt, yeah, but I never felt like, I feel like the purpose of the documentary was to convince me that this film has been overlooked and deserves to be reassessed. And with all the different commentators, I found their arguments compelling, but I never found them convincing.
Right.
The only time it actually has any kind of life, because I can recognize who's talking, is when they interview the drag performer who does performances from, inspired by Showgirls, and later an actress who's kind of a professional Elizabeth Berkley impersonator, yeah, because she does all of these parody stage musicals.
That was more of a surprising, I mean, as it's a close to a twist as a, you know, as this documentary can never have. The fact that such a traumatic event that happened to this commentator in her personal life, that she really, that this film really spoke to her on a deeper personal level, on a level that I'm sure nobody associated with this film ever expected it to. I found that incredibly surprising, without question. Me
too. Absolutely. And I was like, yes, more of this, please. Because here's the thing. You can take something that is not objectively good, but it means something to you. You know, it could be a terrible pop song, but you heard it at an important point in your life. Or, you know, it could be something your grandma cooked, and it's like, maybe it's not the best thing ever, but because it reminds you of your childhood. Those women's stories, those resonated with me because they were explaining to me why this movie meant something to them. Whereas the others seem to be going out of their way to explain something to me that I couldn't perceive. And I'm like, no, I know it's shit. It's okay with it being shit. You just, you know, it just has to mean something to you, but that doesn't mean it has to be good.
Yeah.
Nobody in this movie really says, oh, it's great. I mean, they make that argument, but I never feel like they really think it's great, even though they're trying to convince me otherwise.
Yeah, and these stories, I get, like these little side stories of these people performing these plays and talking about how Showgirls, like, impacted their life. Like, I like that, too. But it just felt like such a small part that was, like, kind of thrown in at the end. And that's why I just kind of felt like I would have preferred to see something that maybe was a little more focused on that or focused on something. It felt like it was kind of a collage of, like, here's a bunch of things about Showgirls that you might find interesting, and that's like some of them are really interesting.
But you know, right? Maybe that was probably because those people don't have, like, they haven't written for The Advocate, they haven't published a book on this movie. You know, they don't have something they can put beneath their name, you know, in the credits. But I will say, I think I found the female critics' reactions to the film a lot more interesting than the males. I think the males tend to, like, I mean, I love that one critic who essentially does a run-through of Verhoeven's work and his style in this film. Because I think the one thing that this film does really well is that it makes you feel like, this is 1995, it feels like another planet, the world of Las Vegas in this film. It's so hyper real, and I think that was spot on. But I love the way that the female critics looked at the character at the female characters in this film. I love how we had one woman who said that they were just a misogynist idea of what of who women are, and I love that another female critic was essentially saying that no, these women aren't fragile creatures. They're fiery, they're passionate, they're determined, they're driven, and they can take care of themselves. And I mean, I love that. I guess I'm really liking that a film that I have been writing off for the last 25 years could spark two different sides of a coin that I never thought would, you know, pertain to it.
I suppose it does seem like a whole much ado about nothing. I mean, you know, it's like one dude, like one of the commentators, like had read or seen the movie over 100 times and then wrote a book of poetry all inspired by Showgirls. And I'm like, there's so much literature and art in the world to inspire you, but I guess Showgirls is as good as anything. I mean, I focused on those when they were talking about how it had an impact on their personal lives. Like you were saying, Frank, as opposed to the folks who are doing more dry critical analysis.
Mm-hmm. In a way, I felt like this was kind of like a wrist slap to me, for being like, you know, I mean, I'm somebody who, you know, loves Grease 2 and loves Spice World and have both of those in my Blu-ray collection. But I, you know, I'm so dismissive of so many films that I just think are just not worth the film they were, you know, shot on, if those were even still shot on film. But I think that, you know, this film, this documentary, you know, it was really sort of like a wake-up call, like don't be so dismissive in a lot of ways. And I mean, I don't know if that was what it was going for, if that's just a surface level approach to this documentary. But I don't know. That's one of the key takeaways I took from it.
No, I genuinely really like that, like, interpretation of it, because I think that, like, no matter what kind of, like, art that you're consuming, like, even if it is, like, perceived to be terrible or whatever, like, if you're getting something out of it and if it's impactful to you, I mean, that does mean something. And I definitely like that interpretation of it.
Yeah.
I mean, Showgirls had an enormous impact on my life, but you don't see me making documentaries about it.
No. Well, I mean,
I sure, mean if, you think I'm sure kidding, that, but I'm really not.
Well, no, I'm sure if you made a documentary about a film, it would be something that was, that'd be more, yeah, that would, yeah, that would speak to you in a more profound way.
But I'm talking about literally Showgirls. Literally, Showgirls had an enormous impact on my life. Well, I got to tell this now because I realized this while I was watching it. And I was like, I had a lot of things that kind of, that's why I connected to the ladies who saw that film at an important part of their lives. Even though I hated the movie, I'm like, I get it why a movie can have an important impact on you and you don't even realize it at the time, because when I moved into Austin, like in 1996, which was a year after Showgirls had come out, I'd only been in town for about a month or less, and I, apart from my roommate, I didn't know anybody, I didn't have a job, I didn't have any money, I didn't have anything to do. The one thing I had was free cable, so I turned on the TV and what's playing? It's Showgirls, and I thought, you know, I'm going to watch this. Maybe it's not as bad as people say. I like Paul Verhoeven. Maybe the critics got it wrong. And I swear to God, after 30 minutes, I got up, turned off the television with disgust. I was like, this is horrible. And let me tell you, if your movie is wall-to-wall, hot, naked strippers with lots of full nudity, and you can't hold the attention of a 22-year-old man who literally has nothing else to do, then your movie is fundamentally flawed. But I got up and picked up an Austin Chronicle thinking, God, there's got to be something in town that I can do, maybe free or an event. Looked in the arts and entertainment section, saw an audition notice for a play I liked, went to the audition, got cast, became a member of a theater company, made a lot of good friends, some of whom are my best friends to this day.
Damn.
Lots of learning experience. It kind of totally, honestly, I wouldn't even be on this podcast if I hadn't had that experience. So who knows? Maybe if Showgirls had been good, I would have actually just kept watching it.
Oh my God.
But no, because it was terrible, I was like, fuck this. I need to do something with my life. And so I just opened up a newspaper and responded to an ad that kind of has charted my life for the past 20 something years. Maybe not charted, but certainly has pushed it in a certain direction for better or worse.
Been an influence.
So, yeah. Yeah, but a negative one, you know?
Who it's knows like, where you would be right now if Showgirls was...
Yeah, great. I mean, I'd probably still be watching TV going, eh, you know, TV's fine. I'll just watch another movie. I'll just watch Showgirls again. Okay, so I have blabbed on enough, and I apologize.
But... That is the biggest backhanded compliment I've ever heard in my life.
What, to Showgirls?
Yeah, to Showgirls, yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I wasn't aware that I was complimenting anybody, but yes, it did have an impact. But hey, you know, I mean, you know, World War II had a lot of negative impacts on people. Black Lives Matter, anything. There's somebody having a negative impact, but some people have a positive impact sometimes. And this documentary is at its best when it acknowledges something good coming out of something bad. I just wish there had been more of that. Let's move into final thoughts. Ryan, why don't you, you've been really quiet.
So I guess what drew me to watching a documentary about Showgirls in the first place was I've always kind of like since high school, starting in high school, I was kind of obsessed with like finding like entertaining bad movies to watch with my friends. And, you know, that led to watching like Troll 2 was the first one, The Room. And there's this amazing documentary about Troll 2 called Best Worst Movie, which you should watch if you haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
It's really, really good. And I've seen Troll 2
in the theater. It was bad.
Definitely was. I was definitely drawn to this for that reason. And I guess my, my general recommendation would be, like, if you are even mildly interested in Showgirls, and have seen it and think it's funny, think it's entertaining in some way, whether you think it's bad or not, I think it's worth watching. I think I would only recommend it to people who are already like even mildly interested in Showgirls already or bad movies. I hate to make this direct comparison because I don't usually like doing this, but like something like Best Worst Movie feels like I think you don't even have to watch Troll 2 to sort of enjoy that story. But I think this, like, for what it is, I found it to be, like, pretty enjoyable. And I think I'd give it 6.5 bags of chips out of 10.
Okay. Well, Frank, what you got to say to that?
I got a question. Does this movie want to make either one of you go back and watch Showgirls?
No.
Out of curiosity?
Honestly... Yes, I gotta be totally honest. Like I think that it really is like extremely entertaining in a campy way for me.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what maybe it's just a, sort of like an acid test or something. But just to go back and see after hearing all these different takes, going back and watching that movie, which I have not seen in years, seeing. Which one applies to me in watching this movie again? I'm just out of sheer curiosity. But I will say that this really is more of a video essay than a documentary. Mm-hmm. But I think as a video essay, I think it's very well done. I love the different perspectives on this, and I really think it is a testament that no matter what sort of like. "Quote unquote bad movie that you have in your closet. You can ask Chris Cox. I've got a lot of them. I mean, there is something that's so that's inherently like validating about watching something like this. I know my quote unquote Showgirls go-to movie is Mars Attacks, which. Yeah, I mean, I was there in the theater the opening weekend it came out. It was the first day of Christmas vacation, and me and my best friend were literally on a Friday night, opening night, the only people in that movie theater. And midway through the movie, my friend told me, like, this sucks. I hate it. Why are we watching this? And I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm standing next to a refrigerator with Mars Attacks fridge magnets on it and a ray gun on my nightstand. Over a decade later, I went to London in this little repertory theater I went to that I used to go to, and they're showing a Mars Attacks as a Tim Burton retrospective, and it's a full house. And I think, oh, my people. So I think that this movie sort of is really, validating in that way. beyond the critical takes, which I think are all, even though I don't agree with all of them, are all genuinely interesting. But I think that really where this documentary really, really works is in seeing, you know, the footage of those drag queen hosted screenings of those vintage screenings of the woman performing the musical version of it. And I've seen the collective enthusiasm and that sort of kinship among the audiences that are in attendance, and the fact that they all like found something in this that the rest of us didn't. And it's fine that we didn't, you know, there's that old saying that every movie is somebody's favorite movie. And I think that this documentary, even though it takes a long time to establish that point, makes that point no movie is ever fully written off, because it does strike a chord with somebody on some level. And I think that that's true apparently even of Showgirls now. So I got to give this 7 out of 10 brown rice and vegetables.
Well said, sir. You're right. Everybody has that favorite movie of theirs that everyone else goes, I don't know what you see in that. And these guys made a movie about that, and they found enough people who also felt passionate about this movie, although sometimes for different reasons and in different ways. For me, the movie is at its best when it reminds us how the media we consume can have an impact on our personal lives and how we connect to it. When it tries to be beyond just the visual essay that it is, it fails for me, because it doesn't really do a good job of, it really doesn't pay off on its thesis, which is, you know, let me explain to you why this movie is better than you've been told it is. What I believe is that this is a movie that is kind of preaching to the converted. If it makes you want to go out and watch Showgirls, then I guess it's done its job. I certainly did not feel that way ever. I was confused a lot of times as to who was speaking on screen and why their particular comment was immediately contradicted by someone else's. It would have been an interesting roundtable discussion.
Yes.
Treating it as a visual essay, yeah, with multiple, yes, narrators made it feel visually sonically confusing.
Wouldn't you love to see all these, absolutely, people like in one big table, like, yeah, countering each other in real time? Like, yes, yes.
Much more interesting than this. Probably more. It would probably been too cacophonous, but still, it was. You know, everybody had an opportunity to kind of give a little portion of their thesis, but instead of like one solid thesis statement, I'm getting multiple arguments for why this movie should be good. I think that was a deliberate choice. I think they were avoiding the dreaded talking heads format. I think they were trying to be inclusive of a lot of different voices and a lot of different perspectives. But as a total film-going experience, I was a little bit let down, even though it's sort of very polished and well put together. Ultimately, I have to give this 6.5 out of 10 cans of dog food.
I'm glad somebody did it. I'm glad somebody. I almost went with thrust it. Thrust it.
You know?
Thrust it. Thrust, thrust it.
See, and the thing is, you could quote that movie, and I really can't, because like I said, my only experience with it was like 30 minutes of watching it and going, all the boobs in the world aren't going to make this interesting. Anyways, I think it's all time for us to put our pasties back on and head back to the club, because, you know.
Break's over.
Break's over, girls. Get back to work.
Eat your doggy chow.
You don't get to get your doggy chow and your brown rice and vegetables. It's actually brown rice and vegetables, just, you know, pureed into a doggy food-like substance. But that's what all the staff at the Crazy Lady eat, so come on.
Yummy.
Yum.